Really let yourself experience whatever is arising right now, whatever that is. Comfort, discomfort, thought free, thought avalanche, hot, cold, curious, bored, whatever is arising, pain, not pain, stiffness, not stiffness, open, closed, it doesn't matter what is arising. The only thing that matters is the paying of attention to whatever we're experiencing. Because if ever we're to master the art of staying present in the moment of now, that's the secret. Nothing else will do but paying attention to whatever is arising and welcoming it, even if we think it's not what should be here. Because if we learn one thing on the meditation journey, it's that whatever's here now is exactly what is supposed to be here now. And all the striving towards some future whatever, or all the agendas and notions of what we should be doing or achieving, it's just a lot of dust. It's just a lot of smoke. As we learn to really open into whatever is arising in this present moment, this now moment, we begin to slip through a kind of a space-time vortex that's deeper than whatever was arising. And we begin to discover that there's something actually quite engaging underneath all the rising and falling, the ups and downs, the ins and outs, the good times and bad. There's something underneath all of that that's holding the whole mess together. Sometimes we call that the self. Sometimes we call it Shiva, sometimes we call it Devi, sometimes we call it the ground of being, sometimes we call it the womb of self. Those are just a handful of the gazillion names. For what we might simply call the huge space inside. The huge luminous space of our ever-expanding being. And that's where we want to move towards when we sit to meditate. And for some of us, that happens very effortlessly right in the beginning. And for others of us, we have to hang in there for 10, 12, 15 years before it begins to happen. The good news is it's happening anyway, whether we're aware of it or not. That's the great news. That everything we seek is inside of us. That there's so much light inside of us, it's rather astonishing. That's why one of the translations of the text we're studying now, the yoga of wonder, astonishment, and delight. Such a beautiful translation of Vijnanabhairava. Wonder, astonishment, and delight. And that is always there underneath the surface stories, the ups and downs, the so-called play of opposites, the great wheel, samsara. Round and round we go. But as long as we're connected to that place inside, that great anchoring place inside, we can contain it all, whatever's arising. So just sit with yourself in this way. Just sit with yourself contemplating these words, these notions. If you haven't done so already, find your breath. The breath is a great focusing vehicle. And it's a lovely, lovely place to start with when you want to sit down. And enter into the subtle realm of your own being. So start with the breath, you know, just feel the way it moves up and the way it moves down. No effort. Easy, simple, paying attention, no forcing, no striving, no judging, just feeling your lovely breath, this great friend that accompanies us through every moment of life. It's pretty amazing, the breath. And just use your imagination and just visualize the breath as this force moving inside of you. And just imagine this lovely container, which is you, surrounding it, holding it. And then it's very nice to charge the breath with mantra. And so as you breathe in, you might sing to yourself Om Shri Kali Ma. You might sing Om Namah Shivaya. People who've been at class and know the Hamsa mantra, you might work with Hamsa. Whichever mantra would like to accompany you, whichever mantra just feels like singing itself into the breath, and in that way it's going to permeate every cell. That's why the breath is such a good force to work with, because it's touching every cell. So when we infuse the breath with mantra, we're helping send the subtle vibrations of these sonic vehicles throughout the entire mind-body system. So we'll sit for a few minutes now, and then I'll talk a little bit, and then we'll do some more chanting and final sit. So Shaivagama has adopted the yoga marga, in which the goal is not isolation of the self, but integration of the self with the universal. So again, it's what we say over and over and over. It's that deep and profound realization that we are consciousness, and it's happening right here, right now, in this body. And that's why, by simply opening into the present moment of this body so much as possible, because it's all happening right here, right? And that's why this is such an interesting text, because all of these dharanas, which are very much centered around working with breath and working with the space between the breaths, you know, in a way, it's this really profound love song to our entire being. It's a love song to the mind-body system. It's a love song to everything that exists within this miraculous mind-heart system. And our mind is in here, and the heart is in here, and the belly is in here, and the breath is in here, and the organs are in here, and everything. Our memory is here. If we believe in past lives, all the past lives, everything is contained in this miraculous system. And the breath is just moving up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down, and all the stuff is constellating around it. And we want to just keep beginning to play with the possibility that every single cell is permeated with luminosity, right? And that that self, with a capital S, is the ground of our being. And it's just, it is light, and it's light that's just radiating up, 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 in, out, 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 through every fiber, every cell, every microcell, just everything is permeated with luminosity. And even though the mind can obscure our realization of our luminosity, it's still there. Because without the luminosity, we're not here. The luminosity is the essential core of our aliveness. So this got me thinking about the earlier verses in this text, you know, and I had skipped right to the Dharanas, because of course, in a very westernized way, I wanted to just cut right to the chase, not waste our time on a frivolous introduction. But I was rereading in this lovely translation this morning. I thought, you know, it's so beautiful. Let us go back to the beginning and read the earlier introductory verses. This is a dialogue that goes on inside of us between the two halves of our whole. And we don't need to personify those two halves as God and Goddess. We can personify them as whatever, being and doing, black and white, yes and no. It doesn't really matter. But you want to really think of it as a dialogue between that which questions and that which answers. You know, that which seeks and that which has the knowledge that contains the answer. And we all have that. We all have perfect wisdom inside of ourselves. But we also have that quest, you know, it's the seeker, it's the quester, it's the questioner. Without the questioner, nothing ever happens. You just sit in the corner, lost in the self, right? It's the question, it's the seeker that makes it all begin to reveal itself. If there's no question, there's no revelation, right? We're just sort of in a rather boring eternal nowness, but somehow without the question, it's not conscious. Yeah? So, and the other piece I really got this morning as I was sitting with this is such a love song to our human beingness, our human being divinity-ness. And especially the way he translates it, so beautiful. So, again, this is the introductory verse. One day, the goddess sang to her lover, Bhairava. Beloved and radiant lord of the space before birth, revealer of essence, slayer of the ignorance that binds us. Beloved and radiant lord of the space before birth. What is that? We don't need a lord. It's simply, what is that? It's the essential presence of the space before birth, which is the big emptiness, right? Revealer of essence, slayer of the ignorance that binds us. You, who in play have created this universe and permeated all forms in it with never-ending truth, I have been wondering. I have been listening to the hymns of creation, enchanted by the verses, yet still I am curious. What is this delight-filled universe into which we find ourselves born? What is this mysterious awareness shimmering everywhere within it? That's the very first verse. It's so lovely. It's so in love with itself. And we really want to cultivate that sense of being in love with ourselves. You know, being in love with the questioner who can be so annoying and is never satisfied with the way things are, and also being in love with that stillness that just knows. And that dance between these two really possibilities within us. It's like the dialectic, right? It's a beautiful thing. And that's so much what this text is really about. So this morning I was reading this lovely article in Parabola magazine by Adya Shanti, and it's called Resurrecting Jesus, Embodying the Spirit of a Revolutionary Mystic. And it's a very beautiful article, which obviously I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I was just like, oh my God, when I read it this morning, because there's so many parallels to Vijnana Bharava. He's talking about the Gospel of Mark, and he's talking about the description of the resurrection in the Gospel of Mark. And I won't read all that now because there's not enough time, but I'll just read this little bit. This is how the resurrection ends in Mark. It's a very brief, very intense scene. Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Salome return to the cave where Jesus was entombed. An immense stone has been rolled in front of the cave entrance, so they're wondering how they will move the stone in order to anoint him with oils and spices. You can imagine their astonishment when they get to the tomb and discover that this great boulder has been rolled away from the mouth of the cave. Who did it? The stone was much too heavy for one person. So again, he writes, you can imagine their astonishment. And we're talking about this yogic path that's called the yoga of wonder, astonishment, and delight. Their second surprise was to find this young man clothed all in white, sitting quite peacefully inside the tomb. We don't know who he is. Mark never says. But I think it's left ambiguous for a reason. The mystery adds to the dramatic flair of the story. And after all, this story is the unfolding of a spiritual mystery. Entering the tomb, they meet this strange young man, and he assures them that everything is fine. You can imagine the shock they must have felt. First, the giant boulder is moved, and then in the empty tomb, where they didn't expect to find anything but the body of Jesus, they encounter this young man clothed in white, sitting there beatific, unafraid. It's a shocking moment. And these three women are astonished and afraid. I want to tell you something. One of the many levels of the name Bhairava in this text, Vijnana Bhairava, means the root of the word Bhairava is actually means fearful. And the word itself morphs into meaning that which is feared. Right? And that which we fear is reality with a capital R. That's which we fear is the mystery, right? And trembling with fear, you know, we tremble in the presence of the sacred. Right? It's a good fear. It's the fear that wakes us up. It's not the fear, it's not the fight flight running from the dinosaur fear. It's the fear of the mystery, and it's a very different kind of a fear. You know, it's that trembling. Jesus' absence is miraculous, but it's miraculous in a terrifying way. They don't know exactly what has happened. The mysterious man alludes to the resurrection. Other gospel writers add many more stories. But in Mark, we get the shortest, most intense version. And now, this is so interesting what he writes. Of course, Mark always goes for the surprise. He turns corners in his storytelling that you don't expect. And this is the beauty of Mark. He's more interested in exploring the unexpected shifts and turns of the story. And I think he does this because it opens the mind and heart to the mysteriousness of life. Right? It's the Hamsa mantra practice. It's peering into the space between. When we keep reading things that are unexpected and encountering scenes that sometimes end almost before they've begun, it leaves us in a mysterious state of being. That's shunyata, that's the space between the breaths. And I think this state of openness is where the writer of the Gospel of Mark wanted to leave us. In fact, it's where all the great wisdom texts want to leave us, in that incredible space of nothingness and everythingness. This is the state in which we can recognize the radiance and we were open and caught off guard by the winds of spirit, we can be transformed into its shining. Right? The word Devi translates as the shining. And I think this state of openness is where the writer of the Gospel of Mark wanted to leave us. This is the state in which we can recognize the radiance. And when we're open and caught off guard by the winds of spirit, which we can also read as the breath, when we leap into that spaciousness between the breaths, we can be transformed into its shining. So, tremendous correlation between this lovely article and what we're reading in Vijnana Bhairava. And it just reminds me and reminds all of us that it's because ultimately they're all saying the same thing. They use different language, different metaphors, but the truth takes a lot of different shapes and forms, but it's ultimately, it can't be spoken, it has to be experienced. And we experience it inside. We experience it in the heart. We experience it in those spaces between. That's why we make such a fuss about a practice like the Hamsa practice. That's why we make such a fuss about chanting, because when we're chanting, the combination of singing and breathing and feeling, it's stretching us open. And that open stretching shifts us into those moments of luminosity.